ever again is a lie. Now that this crime has been repeated since the Jewish state committed genocide, where were you?
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio, well across Africa and far beyond, too. Burkina Faso is in the news now. The Sahel region nation is part of the greatest liberation struggle, perhaps, against Western imperialism the continent has seen in five centuries. Led by interim leader Captain Ibrahim Traoré, Burkina and neighboring Mali and Niger broke from ECOWAS to form the AES, or Alliance of Sahel States, a devoutly pan-African bloc determined to wrest military and economic control of the so-called coup belt countries from foreign domination. But is Traoré the second coming of revolutionary Thomas Sankara and his allies the true harbingers of the long-awaited African renaissance his supporters contend, or just another iteration of power-hungry pretenders, as their critics charge? Claude Gadabouke is executive director and co-founder of the African Great Lakes Action Network, or AGLAN. Claude is a survivor of the prelude to and aftermath of the Rwandan genocide of the early 1990s, and is co-author of the book Survivors Uncensored, 100 plus testimonies from survivors of the Rwandan genocide. Welcome to the program, Claude.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Claude, before getting to the Sahel, can you describe Africa's Great Lakes region and the work you do with AGLAN?
The region is in Central East African, the Central East African part of the continent, almost like the belt of the continent. You have Congo, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Tanzania, and Kenya. Often is included in the Great Lakes region of Africa. A lot of it is centered around one of the largest lakes is Lake Victoria, which is, it's a shared border basically between Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. And then you have other large lakes in the area, a lot of them in Congo. There's also Lake Tanganyika, which is, it touches Burundi, Congo, and Tanzania. And you have Lake Kivu, which divides Rwanda and Congo. And there are a lot of other lakes inside of those lands. Rwanda has a bunch of lakes. Congo has a whole bunch of lakes. Uganda does also, and as do the other countries in the area. What we do is not geography. Our focus is on human rights. It's on uplifting censored, especially censored voices of the people. To ensure that stories of the people of the area are told by the people who lived or are living those stories. Our focus is on peace, justice, and prosperity for the region, and we believe that it all starts with the people being a part and, you know, leading the being the leading voices of the conversations, having their voices as a part of the conversation, that leading to truth being told. They're being leading to justice. It's a region that's very volatile, that's known a lot of atrocities, including the war that you referred to that survived in Rwanda and the genocide in Rwanda. There is a genocide, an ongoing genocide for almost the last 30 years in the Congo that's taken more than 6 million lives and displaced more than 7 million people, among many, many other horrific atrocities committed by Western-sponsored Paul Kagame and Yoweri Museveni. Paul Kagame is the president of Rwanda. Yoweri Museveni is the president of Uganda. And the two of them have teamed up to invade and occupy the Congo in order to make resources cheaply accessible to Western multinationals. And the two of them have received a lot of support from Western nations, the U.S., the U.K., the European Union, Canada's involved, Switzerland, which, you know, those two usually go unnoticed. And there are a lot of Australian mining companies also that are in the Congo. So our purpose is to tell the stories of the people, to lead, to be a part of the movement and revolution that leads to justice and change, that then allows for there to be lasting peace And with that lasting peace, the region can actually prosper from it being such a resource rich, especially the Congo, which has more than $24 trillion worth of resources, which is the reason why there is the occupation and the invasions by its neighbors who are now mercenaries of the West.
Do you want to talk a little bit, Claude, about Pan-Africanism for those that aren't familiar with the term and how it is being revived, I will say, right now in the across the continent?
Yes, and it's been a movement that's been around for a while. And the goal for Pan-Africanism is a unity of Africans, the elimination of colonialism, white supremacy from the continent, neocolonialism, imperialism, just having a continent where the people are thriving and the leaders have the people's best interests at heart, preservation of life and thriving in a thriving continent, and also its diaspora. So in Pan-African terms, we look at, you know, Africa has the five regions. The diaspora is region six, and that includes descendants of Africa who may not even ever have been to the continent or don't have recent relatives who migrated or were taken from the continent of Africa. So it's a global movement, and it's really, if I can just put it in the very simple words, it's for those who have African people and Africa's descendants' best interest at heart. That would be my my summarized way of putting it. And it's a global movement. And today it's being revived, the question that you asked, or at least it's rising in terms of getting a lot of publicity because of what is happening mostly in the Sahel, where we have three nations, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, that are whose leaders have decided to not only expel imperialism and neocolonialism, expel former, and they're getting rid of the former colonial masters, French, and are taking over resources and are wanting to have the resources of those places, which these countries are very rich in resources. Yeah, Burkina Faso is very rich in gold, and Niger is very rich in uranium, and Mali has a lot of other resources as well, including gold and a number of others, other resources under its soil. So now what is happening is these leaders are unapologetically Pan-African. They're also unapologetically anti-Western, especially Western imperialism and neocolonialism, which actually, the way you ask the question actually ties to when you look at, for example, we also have a lot of claims that Paul Kagame and Yoweri Museveni are Pan-Africans, but they're engaged in massacring millions of Africans. So that automatically disqualifies them. But some people see them that way, just by going by their speech instead of what they do. And you look at how the West treats them. They look at them because they're friendly tyrants of the West. They actually promote them and promote their image and protect them and everything. These three nations in West Africa, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, have actually come under not only scrutiny, but attempts at toppling the regimes in place. Now, for me personally, I'm always skeptical of military leaders. Because, and I'll go back to the very initial question you actually, your very introduction about Ibrahim Traore, if Traore is the second coming of Sankara or not. I'm always skeptical because you have to always give it time. A lot of people have come in military uniforms with promise of change, and they have turned on the people in the end. Not only that, generally, military people are not trained to actually deal with civilians. That's not their training. So there is a lot to, you know, to wait and see. But the thing that I go by is, I can't hear you because I see what you're doing. Basically, I want to see the actions. Actions need to speak louder than words. These leaders are putting in the work. Their actions speak louder than words. Number one, if we look at how they're using the resources and getting rid of the exploitation that's taken, you know, since, you know, not just the last century, but the century before, that's been going on for over 100 years or hundreds of years. In fact, if you go back to the transatlantic slave trade, or even the Arab slave trade, and then you come to colonialism and then post-colonial Africa, you look at what is happening in these countries, it's unprecedented for most places. It's on the continent, especially, where countries are saying, no, we're not going to stay under the control of our colonial masters. And we're also going to independently try to build, you know, they're building gold reserves or resource reserves in these countries. They are building refineries, which they didn't have, especially when they had Western puppets in power. These Western puppets were getting all of this IMF money and different things, but never actually built any kind of reserves, national reserves. They're focusing on food security, agriculture, and also they are securing their countries. All of these countries have attacks. They are at war. Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, they have these Islamist terrorist groups that actually sprung up for the most part after the toppling of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, which is north of the Sahel. So all of these are things, just when I look at their actions on what they're doing for the people, and I look at how they are securing resources to benefit the people, is the reason why this sense of Pan-Africanism and the rise, you know, Pan-Africanism is continuing to rise, because people really believe in what they're seeing in action. And I'm one of the people that believes in what I'm seeing in action, by be it Tchiani in Niger, or Simi Goïta in Mali, and Captain Ibrahim Traoré in Burkina Faso. And you asked the question, is he, I guess it was part of your introduction, is he the second coming of Thomas Sankara or not? Well, the actions so far to this day, May 21st, 2025, this man is actually doing what Sankara had started. And so, for all intents and purposes, from what I see and what has been achieved in the last less than 3 years of him in power is remarkable. Since Thomas Sankara had done some amazing things like food security, feeding the people, and, you know, promoting so much prosperity in the country. And, you know, everything is not about prosperity. You know, Thomas Sankara, for my recollection, there was no war, for example. So Traoré is also dealing with the war. There was also, and Sankara was assassinated, and Traoré has also had multiple attempts. There's been multiple attempted coups. And now we've also seen slander and a rise in hate by Western institutions. Obviously, you know, there were French spies that were caught in Burkina Faso. France ended up having to pay a lot of money to get them released. We saw General Michael Langley of AFRICOM speaking about Ibrahim Traoré, of all people, that he could have talked about stealing resources or taking resources for themselves. He picked the person who's actually building. He picked the person who's actually building a gold reserve for the country. and he picked the person, and he was saying that the gold is being used to protect himself, which, of course, I mean, the country's resources are supposed to also be used to secure the people, to secure the country. And when we say the people, the president is one of the people in the country. So there is nothing wrong with resources being used to protect people's lives in the country. But of all people he could have picked, I just found it very, very it would have been very funny if it wasn't such a serious thing, because when these type of things happen, and for it to be done by a black person is not an accident. It reminds me of Colin Powell, with his speech of, weapons of mass destruction to justify the war in Iraq. It reminds me of Susan Rice, blocking all efforts to sanction or to even publish reports showing the atrocities Rwanda commits, Kagame and Museveni, Rwanda and Uganda, are committing in the Congo. It reminds me of the U.S. ambassador to the UN. I believe her name is Greenfield. Oh, and it's a previous ambassador, blocking efforts to show atrocities that were happening to Africans. I believe it was in the Congo also. So it's a long line of black faces in high places that have been used to actually undermine and not, and in some cases really, really harm
Yeah,
other black.
it's pretty rich for a Pentagon man to make those kinds of accusations about the country's wealth being used to enrich the military. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Claude Gadabouke. Claude is the executive director and co-founder of the African Great Lakes Action Network, AGLAN. He is a survivor of the massacre, or the genocide in Rwanda in the early 1990s, and co-author of the book Survivors Uncensored, 100-plus testimonies from survivors of the Rwandan genocide. I like what you say, Claude, about I can't hear what you're saying for watching what you're doing. You're in this in the United States now in Tennessee. That's something that people in Missouri might cotton to or might recognize is the show me state. And don't tell me, don't fill me with your words. Show me what you're doing. Well, in speaking, when you as you so rightly say about the Traore's actions speaking volumes. On the other side of that, and on the other side of the continent, Paul Kagame was hosting in Rwanda a conference just last or earlier this week, the International Security Conference on Africa, ISCA. And in it, when you say that people, some people paint him as a pan-Africanist, he says, quote, "Sovereignty is not just about defending borders. It's about taking responsibility for our security, both as a state and collectively as a continent." He said a lot of things in that along that vein, and his talk was titled "Reshaping Africa's Landscape in a Dynamic, Complex Global Environment." So he is using the language of Pan-Africanism. And when you're saying, you're talking about the threat that Traoré rather poses to the West, as iterated by General Langley. Just today, even now, the news is breaking of a coup, possible coup. It hasn't even been confirmed that there is actually a coup going on, but there is something going on in neighboring Ivory Coast, which is interesting because Traoré charged that a month ago, when there was a failed coup attempt against his government, he traced it back to Ivory Coast and its influence by the French. Who are the French military is still in Ivory Coast, and they are responding now, if reports are to be believed, to this whatever unrest is going on there. Are you following what's happening?
Yes, I am. So that covers a lot of different things. Let me start with just one last thing on that last the last point about Michael Langley. There's also the Council on Foreign Relations that released a scathing, it was a hit piece on Ibrahim Traoré. And part of it was criticizing, because you also made mention about me being in the US and so being in the West. And part of it was not only going off on him, it was, it was an attack on his leadership, and pretty much, like I said, it was a hit piece. Part of it included the criticism of Pan-Africanists who are in the West enjoying democracy and who support him, who rally to Ibrahim Traoré. And I thought it was also interesting that now they're starting to talk about Pan-Africanism when this has never been something that was ever prioritized by Western powers. This has always been a people's movement, a people's, it's been a, people coming together on their own. And so to criticize people that you probably don't even know much about, I found it really interesting. I think it was to maybe try to scare people from supporting the work that Ibrahim Traoré is doing. But one thing for sure is, if he was doing terrible things to Africans, there are some people who call themselves Pan-African who may still support him, just like Kagame has some people who call themselves Pan-African and still support him. But for the most part, true Pan-African people who want the best and who have Africa's best interests at heart, African people's best interests at heart, would not support him. So it looks like basically they're throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks, to tarnish his image, character assassinate him, but also go after and maybe try to intimidate people from supporting him. The next thing you talked about was Paul Kagame using this Pan-African language. Paul Kagame is a very skilled salesperson, and he's also he's built a very strong PR machine. He pays a lot of money. By the way, I spoke about Susan Rice. There's also Andrew Young, who were involved in lobbying for him, paid lobbyists for him, his regime. So Paul Kagame is very good at selling this image of a Pan-African person. He lashes out at the West whenever he's not getting his way with them, but he's their partner. He's their mercenary on the continent. In fact, when you look at his actions, the occupations of Rwandan troops around the continent, in Cabo Delgado, you have Rwandan troops. Cabo Delgado is in Mozambique, way down south. It's right next to South Africa. Mozambique is like slightly north of South Africa. So miles and miles away from Rwanda, multiple countries. There are Rwandan troops who are there securing French oil companies' resources, Total, the company's Total. You have Rwandan troops in Central African Republic. That's also crossing at least the Congo. If there are multiple ways to get there, but you're at least crossing one of the largest countries in on the continent to get there, and they are there to serve Western interests. You've had Rwandan troops in Haiti, had them in Sudan, in Mali also. So he says what he says and what he does are two different things, and it's unfortunate that it's taken so many Congolese lives to be lost, especially in recent times, for people to really see him for who he is. And people are starting to, at least on the continent is waking up to what a brutal mass murderer he is. Now, going to the Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara is similar to Kagame. He's very celebrated by Western powers. He formerly worked for the IMF. By the way, speaking of, Western-trained African leaders or MIS leaders, Paul Kagame was also trained in right close to Missouri. You mentioned Missouri, in
Show me.
Kansas at Fort Leavenworth. So he was trained there. But when he trained there, it was before he came to Rwanda to become a part of the rebellion. He was actually there as a Ugandan soldier. And then, of course, now he's Rwandan. Sometimes, you know, with these criminals without borders, I ask them, what nationality are you today? You know, we have Doctors Without Borders, Reporters Without Borders, we have Criminals Without Borders. And so, you know, he's a criminal without border, but he's a great salesperson. You know, he's able to get away with the crimes for the moment and to pretend that he's a Pan-African. Now, back to the Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara, he not only worked for the IMF previously, but the way he came to power, it was the French military that brought him to power when they came and overpowered the previous president in a disputed election. That president, Laurent Gbagbo, was eventually taken to the ICC and convicted. Alassane Ouattara is one of the biggest partners of the Western imperialism. In fact, after the coups in Mali and Burkina Faso, and then there was a coup in Niger, Alassane Ouattara of Ivory Coast Bola Tinubu of Nigeria, and Patrice Talon of Benin, the three of them try to convince the region, ECOWAS, which is the community of Western, the economic community of West African nations that Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger were a part of. They try to convince them to invade and go and remove the new military regime. That ended up not happening. There was a lot of...
Well, Claude, sorry to stand in, but yeah, it seems like it may be happening. We have to wait and see if Traore was right that it was Ivory Coast that was an agent, a cat's paw for the coup attempt against him last month. We'll see if that government survives. Sadly, Claude, we're fast out of time here. In the last few seconds we have, can you recommend sources to our listeners where they can find out reliable information, credible information on what's going on in Africa?
Well, there's a number of sources. I will say, if you're looking for the Great Lakes region of Africa, we'll recommend our organization, AGLAN, African Great Lakes Action Network, and Friends of the Congo. If you're looking into the Sahel, at this point, there is it's a whole mix of information. But I would definitely look at sources if you're looking at the whole continent, like African intelligence. They usually are well-researched. And there are a number of other independent sources that I'm happy to provide. After this, it would take forever for me to go through all of those, okay, especially on the Sahel, because you have to really dig and get the right stuff.
It's very difficult, and we're kept largely like mushrooms here in the West, in the dark and covered in crap when it comes to getting real information about Africa and anywhere else beyond our borders. Thanks a lot, Claude, for coming on to the show today, and I want to thank Salam Hamdan for her insight on her home in the West Bank. Thanks again, Claude.
Thank you for having me.
Just like Adolf meant what he wrote, that these people would soon all be dead. Where were you when he went on TV? What else could we have tried when he said we should Holocaust them and the Jewish state committed genocide? Where were you when you saw the rib cages? When you realized this really was it? That they actually intended to kill them all, which the pundits would never admit. Now that there's a before and after, now that never again is a lie, now that this crime has been repeated since the Jewish state committed genocide, where were you?